Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glass-Beagle. This is The Big Lead. We're lucky enough to be joined this week by Cassidy Hubberth, who is a sideline reporter and anchor for ESPN. She has a lot of interesting stuff coming up. She's going to be on sidelines of Rockets versus Thunder on Christmas Day this Friday, which is going to be tonight when most people listen to it. She's going to be hosting ESPN's Full Court Press, which is a continuation of the second screen broadcast that they did on ESPN's NBA coverage last year. This time it's going to be on the ESPN app and as well as broadcasting on ESPN News, and that's going to be during the Warriors-Lakers game. And she's also the new co-host of the show Buckets, which is a co-branded ESPN and Cycle show that airs on Twitter. And her co-host of that is Big Lead alum Rob Perez. So that's a lot of different things you've got going on. I'm interested to start with Rockets Thunder. It seems in the last couple weeks that the Rockets have emerged as pretty legitimate competition for the Warriors in the West. Do you give them any shot to wind up in the NBA Finals?
If you're looking at specifically the win streak, yeah, they definitely look like not only a team that is capable of finishing with the best record in the West, considering the injuries with the Warriors, and they don't need to push Steph to come back, and you know, their championship caliber team, they know how to or their championship team, they know how to, you know, pace themselves, and just the chemistry that this team has, like they could potentially give Golden State a run for sure. I mean, if James Harden continues to play like a front runner for MVP, and Chris Paul continues to be this playmaker, specifically when Harden's off the court, to help balance the team, there's no doubt that this Rockets team is scary. And it's not just those two. It's the improvement of Clint Capella. It's their defense. I mean, we're talking about a Mike D'Antoni team whose defense is no joke, and it's because of P.J. Tucker, Luke Richard, and Mbamute. This is a deep team. Ryan Anderson. They have a lot of guys really working, and not to mention they have the headliners. So I'm very impressed with the Rockets. Chemistry is the type of thing that you see it, you notice it when you see it, and they definitely have it.
By a similar token, if the Rockets are the biggest surprise in terms of just how effective they've been this year, it feels like the Thunder are the biggest disappointment. They obviously acquired Paul George and Carmelo Anthony in the offseason, and there were a lot of expectations, especially given that they were a playoff team last year with Russell Westbrook as far and away the biggest star there. Do you see them rebounding and recovering from this and making the playoffs, or do you think that they might become sellers as the trade deadline approaches?
Well, there's a lot to that question right there, because let's first talk about like the success of this team. Like, you know, we get it. It's fun. That's why this league is in such a good place, because there's drama and intrigue like every day. With this team, when you have three superstars, and we've seen it with the Heat's big three, with the Cavs' big three, it takes a little while for them to really gel. And, you know, juxtaposition, what I just talked about with the Rockets, they're so surprising because it just clicked for them right away. It's more the norm of what's happening with the Thunder here. And I've covered a lot of Thunder games this year. And I also happen to watch or cover the game in OKC where they played the Warriors. And that game, they looked like the scary team everyone thought that they could be. Their offense was flowing. Their defense was stout, as it's been all year. And all three guys really stepped up and contributed, led by Russell Westbrook, who was his aggressive self. We also saw that against the Jazz. It was their first big blowout win in a while. I mean, they've actually been winning games, but nothing's really been that convincing. That win over the Jazz was a convincing win, and the three guys, they were efficient from the field. They got Steven Adams more involved. I think there's a lot of issues with the bench. Everyone's focused on, you know, the big three and them not having a flow to their offense. And let's be honest, like, it's been rough watching them a lot. It's just not been pretty basketball. But those three have the capability to really have a flow in the offense that can be pretty to watch, that can be fun to watch. Not maybe not pretty, but it can be fun to watch. And I'm not panicking. And every time I cover them, everybody that I talk to in and around, you know, my circle and basketball circles are not worried about the Thunder. But to answer the second part of your question with the trade deadline, there's going to be a lot of pressure there because they're going to have to decide if they continue to stick with this because they went all in on this year, or try to get something for Paul George if they really haven't turned a corner by, you know, February 8th. So I don't know. I think right now, I think that game Christmas Day is going to be a big for the Thunder, and it's at home, and you know, it's going to be a fast pace for OKC's, and you know, hopefully their defense can keep up, because you know they've shown that they've been defensively very strong, but they a big part of why they haven't been consistent is that they can't keep the energy up in the third and in fourth quarters and in clutch time. And, you know, sitting down with Billy Donovan, he basically said, like, it just comes down to each one of those guys. Just, they feel like they just need to take over and help the team out if they're kind of struggling. And so that goes to chemistry. And I'm still a believer that they have time, but it's starting to run out.
If I'm a Thunder fan, I think I'm really worried about Carmelo Anthony, because I know that there are some days where the ball movement is great, but just by and large, it almost feels like he's a byproduct of like a bygone era in the NBA of ISO ball at the expense of ball movement. And if things don't improve this year, and he doesn't start to play better at a level that maybe we've been accustomed to in past years, I'd be worried about getting stuck with his $20-plus million year contract for next season.
Yeah, but, you know, each season's different. And I still think you're right. I mean, that mid-range jumper is a little antiquated in today's game. But I don't think he's been, and people are just wanting him to point to him that he's the problem. Yes, he can't shoot right now, but it's the entire flow of this Thunder offense. And if you really want to dig into the problem with this Thunder team, I mean, you have to look at Russell Westbrook. He just hasn't been the same guy that he was last year. And that makes sense. When you're having to be everything for a team, okay, with someone of his caliber and his athleticism, he pulls off a historic season like he did last year. It's just the personalities of these of the three guys that it's just a hard mesh for the three of these guys. And I think Carmelo is an easy person to point out because he kind of has like that old man like YMCA game at times, and so it's like, all right, that guy's the problem. But I can see Carmelo, once the flow of the offense starts, you know, once they start figuring each other out and becoming more efficient and stopping the ISO ball and actually start catch and shoot, like I can see Carmelo picking up his game. He's not going to be, you know, the dynamic scorer that he was in his past, but like he's on the back end of his career.
So switching to the ESPN full court press that you're going to be hosting, I guess, tonight when people are listening to it with the Warriors and the Lakers, it's going to be a little bit different than the sidecast last year where it was a bunch of people in a room and it was just constrained to that. But you're going to be kicking to the studio in Los Angeles. You're also going to be kicking to Doris Burke on the court. Can you tell me about all of the different people who are going to be involved in this broadcast?
Yeah, well, first we'll start actually in studio with in Bristol. It's going to be me and Jalen Rose, Woj, Nick DePaula, who's specializes in, you know, shoes and sneaker deals, and it's going to give us a little more insight on, you know, big baller brand and Steph's deal with Under Armour, Bobby Marks from front office, Mike Schmidt, a draft expert. So the conversation we're trying to have, it's a second screen experience. So you're watching the Lakers and Warriors. We're trying to not only comment on what's happening in the game, but have that lead us into more conversation, deeper into, you know, what's going on with these teams on a deeper level. We're even going to interview Bob Myers at halftime. Talk to him about, you know, how he constructed this bench, and maybe the fact that he has to kind of figure out how he's going to construct next year's bench, and really dive into another level of a coverage of both of these teams. And, you know, there's a lot that Mike Schmidt knows about Kyle Kuzma's upbringing and how you know, his journey to where he is right now. So, you know, you can get commentary on the surface, you know, anywhere. What we're trying to provide viewers is that really in-depth just coverage of the Lakers and Warriors in this second screen ability to be able to watch the game, you know, on your television, and then, you know, watch us on the app and get additional commentary. Say, you know, Lonzo goes off, having a little more insight into, you know, what his journey has been like to get to the NBA. And, you know, maybe that will help you understand, you know, how this year has played out for him. So not only will have those guys in studio in Bristol, but we're also going to be going out to site. It's Dave Pasch, Doris Burke, and Israel Gutierrez on the call in Oakland. So we're going to be checking in with them here and there. And we're also going to be joining Beatle and her crew in the LA studios and Countdown, you know, after halftime and throughout the quarters. And we're just trying to keep the conversation going and showing, you know, just how far reaching our coverage can go here. So it's, I'm not sure. I mean, Woj did a second screen experience when he was covering the draft a couple of years ago. And I know we did something along the lines of a second screen experience last year. And, you know, we do this with our mega cast in college football as well. This is the NBA is it, like, there's the storylines are abundant. And so when you have such smart and plugged in people like we have on the set, the conversations are, you know, there's going to be no end to them because there's so many different areas to dig into.
Pardon me if this isn't something that, like, a conversation you've been apprised of, but one of the issues I had on the second screen last year, and this is always the case with streaming, and it's an issue with Twitter, where the stream is like a minute behind the game and a minute behind social media. But if you guys are on ESPN News, and I assume that by this point, most people who are watching it on there are going to be watching it on a flat screen, high definition television. On ESPN News, on that broadcast, are you guys going to have the game on in a corner of the screen? Or is it going to be purely you guys reacting to the game that people are maybe watching on another screen?
Well, I think we're going to have the game in a corner, but there are times where we may call for a specific highlight and go away from the broadcast and say, hey, like if, you know, Larry Nance Jr., you know, has a huge dunk and we notice it, but the broadcast has moved on and we want to recall it, then, you know, we'll go to it. But the game will be on. Our PR people tweeted out what the look is going to be like. We're going to have a lot of stats on the screen as well as the game. The thought is it's a second screen experience, is that you'll be watching the game and you'll have us, you know, whether it be on the app or watch ESPN for ESPN News. So, you know, we are complementing the game.
Cool.
Let me ask why, because I think they're still working out the details. Is this because would you prefer to have the video bigger of the game?
No. Okay. So it's a tough thing to do to watch the second screen on a computer or a phone while the game is on, because the game is a minute ahead of the stream. So what you have to do is like pause the game on TV, on DVR, and then hit play at the moment where you guys are, and then you're behind Twitter. But if it's on ESPN News and you've got like the bottom quarter of the screen, like bottom left is the game, it's big enough for you to follow the game while also having your primary attention on you and Woj, etc. And I think that would be the optimal viewing experience for me. But I can understand why on a computer or a phone, when you're already watching the game on television on the first screen, you don't want it intruding too much.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I think you just got to tune in and see how it plays out. I mean, it's all experimental. It's experiential. It's not going to be like it was last year. So I guess that's how I'll put it. The second screen, it's just not the same. It's just not the same, approach. And, yeah, I mean, I'm excited myself to see, you know, they've been working on this for a couple weeks, and, you know, I'm excited to see how the layout turns out as well.
For people who aren't familiar with Rob, who is on Twitter as Worldwide Wob, Cassidy and Rob are going to be hosting. Their debut is this week on a co-branded Twitter video between Cycle and ESPN, where they're going to be doing some like derivative and social NBA talk. Can you tell people what to expect from that?
Yeah, I mean, so if you're not familiar with the Worldwide Wob, then you're sleeping, because he is probably the best follow on NBA Twitter. There's just some people who have an eye, and he notices things in this league that, you know, that nobody else does really. And he creates sort of movements on NBA Twitter. And, you know, I've just been a fan of his for a while, and we developed a relationship actually over Twitter, being fans of each other. And obviously, ESPN is in a partnership with Cycle Media, and I was actually a guest on Bucket Season 1 last year, and I was blown away by what Rob was able to do last season with Buckets, produce high quality show that, you know, streamed live on Periscope and had direct interaction with viewers. And I just thought it was brilliant. And where our business is going, more fan interaction in real live experiences like that. And so when I was approached about joining the show and collabing with Rob, I was very interested in the opportunity because I believe in Rob's vision and his insight on the league. I've always wanted to do a show that, you know, is about the fun of the NBA. The NBA is just, there's so much personality. And I actually think that Rob has a huge part to do with, you know, showcasing in and around the league, and showing how much fans are involved in like the success of the league. And that's pretty much the hope that we can portray on our show. Rob says a mantra before every show. It's a lifestyle. So our show is about the NBA fan and about what they get excited about. It's not X's and O's. It's about like having fun and getting carried away with certain personality traits of players, of teams, and just really embracing, you know, everything that this league is today and having access to just every bit of fun that the league provides.
As somebody who spends really an unhealthy amount of time and energy observing ESPN, it's pretty clear, especially over the last year or two and going forward, that you're somebody who is pretty highly focused in ESPN's plans to elevate as a personality, a host, and a reporter. And I'm wondering if there is anybody either who is a talent or somebody behind the scenes that you want to spotlight, and you can name multiple people if you want, who has been like a really good mentor in terms of like helping you with your trajectory there.
I've had a lot of people who have helped me. I mean, I would say there's a couple people who have really helped me in the beginning of my career at ESPN, a couple behind the scenes producers, Anthony Moore-Mile, who has since passed, but he was one of the first people who was really a champion of mine when I was hired as a ESPN 3 host and working in digital. He really, took it upon himself to try to, you know, sing my praises and help me move up within ESPN. Another person like that was Maureen Hassett-Lindsay. You know, I started, she was also a behind the scenes coordinating producer. And she helped me kind of understand ESPN a little bit better, because I entered ESPN, you know, working as a independent contractor and working as an ESPN 3 host. So I was a digital host. And so at that point in time, around 2010, you know, there was probably a stigma attached to being a digital host. And I wasn't legitimate enough to make my way into onto the linear side. And so she helped me kind of navigate, you know, the inside of ESPN, which is, you know, it's a big place, and helped me, you know, get to know a lot more people, and then ultimately helped me, you know, get into a place at ESPN where I could become a full-time employee. And then another person who has helped me is Bruce Bernstein. He was the one who put me on NBA Tonight and NBA Coast to Coast and really helped me make the transition to covering the NBA for ESPN, which is really where, you know, I feel like I came into my own there and developed a confidence that helped me, you know, improved each day. And when it comes to like on-air people, my first true mentor who I still learn from every single day is Stuart Scott. He was a dear friend, and you know, I just think about everything he went through and how every time he stepped on, you know, into the Sports Center studio, he wasn't someone who had cancer. He just was the legendary Stu Scott and performed his ass off every single time he got onto that desk. And, you know, I would see him after shows and he would be in so much pain, and it just, you know, he loved it. He loved it. It was his passion. It gave him life. And it was, and he was the type of person who, you know, knew everybody's name behind the scenes. And when you talked to him, it made you feel like you were the only person in the room. He just was such a wonderful spirit. And whenever I feel like, you know, I'm overtired or I'm being like pulled in too many directions, I think about him, because he like really does inspire me, every day, because he's still, in my opinion, the best that this business has ever seen. And then currently I would say, one of my best friends is, Diana Russini, and, she covers the NFL for ESPN. And, you know, I've developed such a really nice relationship with her while we're both kind of attacking two separate sports, and we really kind of bounce stuff off each other, trials and tribulations, like, you know, any type of, stresses that we may have, we just kind of talk to each other about it. And then, you know, remind each other to just keep grinding and keep your head your head down and just continue to be a good professional. So, like I can go on and on, but those are the five people that, you know, really stick out in my mind that continue to help me today, you know, venture on and continue to strive to be the best version of me I can be.
You mentioned earlier in that segment the digital stigma and how to kind of advance from digital to linear at ESPN, which really at this point they're starting to get blended together a little bit more, really.
Oh, they're blended.
Virtue of how we discuss, but
yeah.
I was wondering if there was ever any point in before you made that transition, if you had a crisis of confidence and you wondered, is this the right path for me? Am I going to make it in this behemoth? And if so, how you wound up pulling out of it and moving forward?
All the time. I'm saying that right now. Like, it's like this business is hard, and I'm at ESPN and I still pinch myself because, you know, I'm doing big stuff on big stages. So, it was a grind early on to, try to convince people to get opportunities so I can prove myself. And you know, it's even determining who are the right people to talk to in order to get those, opportunities. So, you know, ESPN is an incredible place. It really is. Because it provides, so many different ways to grow. And like early on, like I've worked on pretty much every show, at ESPN aside from OTL and NFL Countdown. So, you know, I've been very fortunate to be able to not only, you know, learn more about myself in all those different roles, and grow, but I've had the opportunity to actually be on so many different platforms and, you know, understand what type of person I want to be in this business, on air and also off air. So, you know, there were many times where the late nights of being, you know, on NBA Tonight, not going on until 2 a.m. and, you know, going to bed at 6 a.m. That's this business. Like anyone, you know, this is a whole nother question probably, but if I were to give any advice to people in this business, like it definitely is glamorous, but know that, you know, there are no limitations to what you're doing, and when you're doing it. This business is 24/7. So, there was many times where it felt like, am I going to make it here? But, fortunately I've been able to find opportunities and prove myself along the way.
You mentioned all those opportunities, so I want to get you out of here on this. Let's say any live right could be part of ESPN, and as part of this question, you're not Game of Thrones-ing somebody you respect out of a job. What are the two or three properties, either studio shows or game telecasts in across all sports that you would love to be a part of before your career is all said and done?
You know what? I'm doing it. I'm doing what I want to be doing. I've worked on a lot of different shows at ESPN. I've been fortunate enough, and now getting this chance with Buckets to find my own kind of voice within, you know, covering the NBA. So I have a mixture of sideline reporting, and so actually being there and finding more credibility by talking to players, talking to coaches, developing relationships, you know, not only within organizations, but within the NBA. Even though I love being in studio, I know being out in the field is where I need to be right now, especially if I want to continue to grow within the NBA. And then getting this opportunity with Cycle and Buckets, I'm able to, you know, showcase my personality and my passion and love for the game with just fun commentary about, you know, how I view the NBA and how I engage with the NBA on social. And, you know, I know I'm just 33, so I'm not going to say like I've already achieved my goals in my career, but I feel pretty good about where I am. And I just want to continue to grow with this business. And I think it's pretty hard to say there's properties that I want to work on at this point in time, because I think the business is changing so rapidly. So my answer to your question is that I just want to continue to grow with the business. That's my dream. And hopefully I can, and hopefully my voice can continue, or hopefully one day matter.
Is there anything that we didn't discuss, either NBA landscape, your career, the general landscape at ESPN, that you think is like really important to talk about right now?
I think I've said it over and over again, just about how great of a place the NBA is in. You know, I'm sure you saw that, like, our ratings alone are up 18%, and we're not even at Christmas. And it's just, I feel very fortunate that I'm able to work on the NBA and within this property that is just really in such a good place. I mean, I grew up during, you know, the 90s NBA, which was like, will always hold a special place in my heart as like the best era of the NBA. But what's happening right now with the stars and the competition, I think it's just pretty awesome.
As good, at least, because no one can compete with Michael Jordan and all the stars that played then. But now we have all the stars, as you mentioned. We've also got League Pass and social.
Yeah.
And there's just so many other ways to consume it than there were then.
Exactly. And that's why, and that's the whole reason for like Buckets. So the show that I'm doing with Cycle, we're trying to put a lens on that like there is a subculture to the actual NBA. It's the passionate fans of the NBA, and it's changed, you're right, because of the access we have to not only watching games, like you used to only be able to see the games in your, you know, local market. Now with League Pass, you get to know, you know, people outside your markets. You get to know their bench and the personalities of the people. Even you get to know like who Red Panda is because you're watching League Pass, and you know, like then you just become obsessed with the halftime shows. And there's just it's all trending in such a positive direction for the whole league. And you know, like I said, I can't say enough. I know I sound like a fangirl or a company girl, but I'm just I feel very fortunate.
Thanks so much, Cassidy. We really appreciate it. Best of luck on the Full Court Press on Christmas and beyond.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
Okay. Well, that was Cassidy Hubberth. You can catch her all over the place on ESPN, Cycle, Buckets, and I believe that we're going to be seeing a lot more of her all over ESPN going forward.
Such turn strange.